So on today's episode of the podcast, I've got my man, John Briggs. A lot of you know John. John owns Insight Tax, probably the largest accounting firm out there for the fitness industry. He's also written Profit First for Microgyms, which is a cash flow management system. But we're not here to talk about cash today. John just wrote a new book called The 3.3 Rule, and it's about productivity. Essentially looking at studies and the way our brain works, our brain's natural rhythm that goes in and out of states of focus and distractibility, and working with that. For those of us that are, you know, strength and conditioning coaches in the room, we're talking about like interval training for your brain. Essentially, the 3.3 rule utilizes a max of up to 3 hours of intensely focused work and then at least 30% recovery time. And you can come up with a bunch of different rhythms. We talk about that here on the podcast, kind of different intervals to work throughout the day to get more done. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. Go and check out John's book, The 3.3 Rule, and you can even go ahead over to his website, 33rulebook.com. I've got the links in the show notes. You guys are really going to enjoy it. Let's get into the podcast. What is up, guys? It is Stu. It is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. On, once again, I have my colleague, my CPA, and my buddy, John Briggs with Insight Tax, also Profit First for Microgyms, which is like, it's one of the first three books any new client I work with, I make them go and get immediately. But now I probably have to get them a fourth book because John has released the 3.3 rule. John, do me a favor, buddy. If you're in the, give the elevator pitch real quick, just because everyone has an idea as to what are we talking taxes today? Are we talking productivity? What are we doing with 3.3?
More productivity for sure. Okay. So 3.3 rule, it's a new workday standard, and we can get into all of it, but I want to talk about the history and even why we have the way our work week is structured. Spoiler alert, it's not based on science. And so I looked at the science, and there's just a better way for us to approach the way we work. I mean, it's interesting how this has come up with gym owners specifically and the way they structure their classes with maybe having coaches back-to-back teaching classes. So very applicable to gym owners.
One thing I found very interesting, you had sent me an early manuscript, or it was, you know, way before the book was published.
Right.
And you referenced, I think it was a study by was it the University of Illinois?
Uh-huh.
And there's just one line in there, and I wrote it down specifically. It was, I forget the name, it was like some, I don't know, a French name, or I don't know.
It's Alejandro Yedes.
Alejandro, my bad. Way off. Not French at all.
Samsonite.
It was that attention. Everyone thinks attention span, or we lose attention. And this is the thing that hit for me in the beginning of that was attention isn't the problem. Our attention's always on something. It just, you know, you have this moment where you're working on a thing, whatever, maybe writing a book, your taxes, whatever it is. And then that attention just wanes over time. So it's not that we lost attention. It just got redirected on something else. So essentially what he was saying in that study was that attention on a singular unit, a singular item, a task or whatever, just is not infinite. Your attention's infinite, but not on any one particular thing.
Yeah, exactly. He, at that time when he was determining what to do with studies, because I don't know if people know this, professors have to do a certain amount of studies that as part of their keeping professorship stuff. And the big thing was like, everyone's trying to figure out what's the magic bullet for length of attention. Like, what is our attention span? Because if I can figure that out, then we can do all these things. And then he sat back. He's like, hold on a minute. If I'm daydreaming, my attention is still on something. It's just not on what maybe I should be focused on. So he took that, and then he looked at some studies that talk about physical stimulus. So for example, we got dressed this morning. You might not be wearing pants, Stu, but I can see you're wearing a shirt.
Typically don't wear pants on Thursdays.
Yes. No pants Thursdays.
Yep.
So we put on our clothes, but we actually, our brain, because it's a constant stimulus on our skin, neutralizes that. Meaning it no longer registers. But now that we're talking about it, you can probably feel the weight of it a little bit as you move ever so slight, you can feel the friction. But constant physical stimulus, our brain will neutralize it. The same studies show that if you stare at an image long enough, it'll physically disappear from your vision, even though it's still there. So he said, interesting. I wonder if the same thing happens to the way we approach things mentally. So he did these studies. He's like, I wonder if constant stimulus to our mental capabilities also becomes neutralized. So he had four groups of people. I won't get into all the nitty gritty of it, but ultimately he determined that those who had an interruption, a purposeful interruption to what they were doing, were as productive at the end of the 50 minutes as they were at the beginning, where all the other ones, their productivity declined over the course of the study.
For everyone listening to John there, that, and we, if we were to just segue this to marketing, for example, if everyone remembers back to when banner ads were a big thing, Google back in the day, when you would look at Google, we didn't, you know, it looked much different. You had ads right and left-hand side, and that was digital advertising pre-social media. And what they found in advertising was that eventually, on a long enough timeline, people didn't even see those ads because we were just so used to scrolling and seeing, you know, these ads on each side. But after a while, you don't see them anymore. So the value of those, I remember when guys I knew that were selling digital advertising back in the day, they're like, dude, you just can't sell banner ads anymore because all the studies are out there. Nobody even sees it because we've been looking at it like that for so long.
And they're not, they literally aren't seeing it. It's white noise to them. Like, anyone ever put up an inspirational quote on their mirror or something? Yeah. It doesn't take very long for your brain to stop realizing that's even there.
Yeah. 100%. And you know, it's so funny. So around, maybe it's been less than a year now. I started, I bought my daughter a guitar. I played guitar in high school and college. And I haven't played since. I mean, it's been whatever, since 2000, when I graduated college, 2009. So just recently picking it back up. But now I purposely work for X period of time. And then as that attention, I start feeling like, I'm not it, whatever. I spend 20, 30 minutes just playing. And then revitalizes me. And I think there's something to it because it's the guitar and I'm not good at it again yet. And I'm having to work hard. But that break is just, I mean, even for someone here who naturally might do, it's like interval training, right? For your productivity, essentially. I found that just to be the best part of the day, to the point where I look forward to that upcoming break. And I then look forward to returning back to the work.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the science helps us understand, that without purposeful breaks, we lose kind of the passion. That's not even the right word, but we lose the desire to stay focused all the time. Think about sitting down for your work day and you're like, wow, I got a whole 8 hours ahead of me. With maybe I get a lunch break or something. Like, you kind of take your sweet time. You know, you're like, I'm going to spread this out. I'm going to treat today like a marathon instead of, you know what? I'm going to have a focus block and I'm going to have an intentional break. You know, there's a book called Deep Work by Cal Newport, and it's a good book. And I feel like my book, The 3.3 Rule, picks up where his stops, because Cal's book is about the idea that there's frenetic work, frenetic shallow work, or deep work. And kind of the argument is everything you should do should be deep work. Well, I argue, I feel like successfully, that if you have a business of any sort, there's an element of frenetic shallow work that has to be done. You can't avoid that. So just to say like everyone should be figuring out how to have deep work all the time isn't good. But Cal did a bunch of studies on distraction and focus and all that stuff. And one of his quotes is, we don't need to take a break from distraction. We need to take a break from focus. And that's what we're talking about here.
And again, for those of us, you know, with the exercise science in the background, it's, you know, so last year I spent all last year training for the Chicago Marathon in 2023. And that was the first time I had ever trained LSD, long, slow distance, right? Slow being relative. And but like that amount of endurance, aerobic work, I had never really done. I did lacrosse, which is interval, you know, it's sprinting essentially. It's sprint down the field and then it's, you know, lower intensity for a while, then you're back down the other side. I did CrossFit forever, right? So much more interval based, you know, right? I guess that you could call it high RPM, steady state. But what we're talking about here is it's much more interval based if you were thinking about like HIIT, you know, for your productivity. Is there any value though? Just like you kind of, for fitness, do some intervals, do some steady states, zone one, you know, long duration cardio every now and then. Is there any benefit to doing long, like reading a book for I guess you would read a book for 5 hours. Maybe you would do a puzzle for 4 hours. Is anything like that? Should we still do long efforts?
During the workday, when you're thinking about what do I need to get done to move my business forward or to keep it, you know, whatever state you want it to be in. No, and there's no value. The science does not support there's any value in doing something for a really, really long amount of time. And that's what we're talking about. So for example, you know, we can go through some good and bad break ideas, but when you're on a break, some of the stupidest stuff you could do on that break, if we're doing the interval working idea, right? I work up to 3 hours, I take a 30% recovery. We can get into the whole rule there, but if I'm doing that, when I'm taking my actual break, I don't want to be on TikTok. I don't want to be on social media. I don't want to be playing any of these phone app games that are designed to hit my brain with a bunch of dopamine. Those aren't great ways to get your brain to reset. There's no judgment. If you like to do those things, awesome. But that's something that you do when it's just like, now I'm on my own time. I'm not considered on work time. What I want to do, great. Scroll on TikTok for all. If you want to do that with your life, great. You know, but so in those cases, if I want to spend 4 hours on a puzzle, yeah, I'm not doing that in between maybe work intervals. Obviously, based on your thing, maybe you've never read for 5 hours straight. I have definitely got sucked into some good books, and that was possible. But most of the time, it's because I'm on an airplane and then I can't do anything else.
It's my daughter's really into Legos now, and so I'll be down here and in the studio, and I'm working on something. And when it's time for me to take a break, like if she's down here instead of me playing the guitar or whatever, I'll just sit down and play Legos with her. And I feel that, and I want to know your opinion. Is it beneficial to still have something that is cognitively challenging to a degree, where like it, or should it be like Zen meditation, like shutting your computer off? You ever like leave your laptop and you're like, holy shit, I haven't turned my laptop off in a month. And then you turn it off, and when you and it's just like, thank you God, like that fan in there has been revving constantly. Should we shut it down completely or still keep some kind of cognitive load during those rest periods?
You don't want any cognitive load during that rest period. So right brain, left brain type of stuff, creative things. Like, so playing the guitar for your break time, awesome.
Okay.
Taking naps, great. Just talking to someone about anything that's not work-related, great. Getting up, walking, sitting, meditating, staring out the window. My favorite thing to do is take a nap right here on the floor. Just really? Lay down 10
just
minutes.
Just pop right down?
Pop right down, 10 minutes, I'm great. I'm good to go. But yeah, nothing that's going to stimulate, like, yeah. Like if I'm doing tax returns, going to email for my break period is not a good idea. Right. So even, and this is the challenge with gym owners, for example, if I'm coaching the class and I need to take, and I'm now moving into my 30% break period, I can talk to the people that were in the class, but I want to make sure that conversation is about what's going on in your life. Not, hey, let's talk about your form on that squat. Let's, you know, how did it hurt? Like in your case with the constant stimulus, I can't remember the phrase you guys, but right. Like, did it burn a lot? Do you think you could hold on longer next time? Like, you wouldn't want to do any of that type of stuff. You wouldn't want to do coaching. You would want it to be like, let's be friends.
Sure.
Which worked out really well for our benefit, because guess what? If your members are friends with the coaches, they stay longer.
It's interesting. It's kind of, was it Nick Saban or maybe it was Jim Tressel? It was an NCAA like Division I college football coach talking about, when I wasn't writing up plays, I was watching film. When I wasn't watching film, I was talking to players about plays. When I wasn't talking to players about plays, I was talking with coaches about plays. And he talked about how at a certain point, it's like you think you're sharpening an axe, but really all you're doing is dulling it. It's like, you know, it's snow blindness for those of us, like maybe when you're in your business, you know, someone gets on a call with maybe me or you and they're talking about something and we're like, the solution to the problem is right there. Do you not see it? It's literally, you just said it 7 times and they never see it. Again, going back to the whole, they can't see it because they're in it so closely. And then they're like, holy fuck, I just really pay you all that money to tell me that thing? Like, yeah, but I mean, like, it was right there the whole time. You just you would have never been able to see it though, because you think you're sharpening your axe by doing this, then this, then this, then this, then this. But you're never gonna. It's like gym owners when I'm like, when was the last time you took a field trip to a city you haven't been that has fitness brands, gyms you've never been to that you don't want to be? Things other than yours. When was the last time you got out of your four walls and went and saw what the rest of the industry is doing? And they're like, I never do that. And I'm like, I take field trips every quarter back when I had a gym. I take field trips every time I'm traveling constantly in every city. It's what's here that I haven't seen before in any kind of service-based business, not just fitness. I'm going to do a screen share real quick, John. And if you could, I want to lay, I'm in the pre-roll for this thing. I'm going to give the one-liner for the 3.3 rule so everyone has understanding. Okay. But what I'm going to do right here is just share. And this is a PDF, guys, that you can get on John's site for this. And I'll have links and all that down here. But let's just share this guy right here. This thing is great. Boom, boom. Window. Bingo, right there. All right. So in the 3.3 rule, obviously 3 hours of work, 30% or what, and then 30% of whatever your work effort is your rest. That's so right. It's a 1:0.3 ratio. Mm-hmm. We'd say, or a 3:1 ratio.
How 3:1. Yeah.
3:1. Okay. Yeah. 3:1 ratio. Walk us through these different rhythms. What is a rhythm? And it's like for anyone who's not watching on Spotify or YouTube or whatever, is just listening, walk us through these different through rhythms.
So, just as a reminder that what you heard at the very beginning, the 3.3 rule states the most productive work day is to work up to 3 hours, followed by a 30% recovery period. But we did it on purpose because the science doesn't support this is the exact number. We're all different and we can totally accept that we're all different. So a sprinter, these are three generic approaches on how you would maybe apply the 3.3 rule to your day. So if I know that I just like things, maybe I consider myself a bit of ADHD type of thing, I might be more of a sprinter. It means I'm good to focus on a short amount of time, but I have high distractibility. So I'm going to work a short amount of time, maybe up to an hour. So if I work an hour, then I'm going to follow that by a 20-minute break. There are some people who maybe have to go even more extreme and they work a half hour and take a 10-minute break. That's totally fine. There's no judgment here, right? It's got to be what works for you. At the end of the day, in an 8-hour cycle, it works out to be 6 hours of focus time. Because studies showed, Stu, that your average worker is only productive 2 hours and 53 minutes a day.
So I'm curious, how is that measured?
So they just did a study, like 2000 people, they surveyed it. They had them fill out stuff, like, what are you spending time on?
Sure.
And they found there's like almost like 5 hours plus a day where they're just like dicking around.
Do we find that? And again, you run a very large multi-million-dollar, tax firm. It's funny, the company of one, me over here, where it's just me and some VAs and creative directors and stuff like that. But like, do you believe that the corporate and gym owners listening to this, you've got staff, but it's, I'm from John's perspective here with many, 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 many staff. Do we think that corporate setting of like that email or that meeting could have been an email type bullshit? Do we feel like a lot of that has to do with that level of productivity? People saying I worked 8 hours today, but only got less than 2 hours of actual productivity done. Is it workplace stuff? Is it like, oh, Sally came in the office and gossiped with me and chewed my ear off for fucking 20 minutes, almost 20 minutes.
There's so many factors, There's not a single one. Part of it is that the workday is currently structured the way it's still structured. That's a problem. Hey, sit down for 8 hours, take 2 15-minute breaks and a lunch, if that, but by the way, you probably don't want to take those breaks because I'm going to dock you and you're not being productive enough and all that crap. And on top of that, a lot of large corporations, the bigger we get and the more I see in other larger corporations, they don't do a good job with accountability. So a lot of these people are just walking around because no one is saying, why the heck aren't you doing your job? They just don't have good accountability measures. So it is a little bit different for gym owners where, if you have coaches, they're probably showing up for the class and leaving if they're not in the class, or The only other time they show up is when they want to get in their own workout type of thing. So yeah, it's a little bit definitely different scenario in that regard.
Yeah. Which do you identify with, the sprinter, the jogger, or the Zen master here?
I'm glad you asked. It depends, right? So just for those listening who maybe don't see the visual, the second generic one is a jogger. This is someone who's like, I can focus on something for a little bit longer, but man, going 3 hours seems ridiculous. So that's, I maybe work up to 90 minutes to even 120 minutes if you want. And then you, again, take a 30% break period after that. The Zen master is someone who's like, yeah, I can totally do this. Work up to the 3 hours. In fact, usually the Zen master is someone's like, I'd like to work longer than the 3 hours because I feel like I'm in flow state. Well, studies show even if you're still enjoying it and in flow state, your productivity will decline after 3 hours. So like, Stu, I know this is weird, but if you give me financials and say, hey, can you do some forecasting? I love that stuff so much. I could easily like get in the zone and 3 hours would pass like that for me. I love it. So I could easily do that. You asked me to get on the phone and talk to people. I'm definitely going to be more of a sprinter. So we provide the three generic approaches, but then we want everyone to understand it completely depends on who you are and what that task feels like to you. I have others who love talking on the phone. They could do the Zen master approach, picking up the phone as a receptionist or a call center person, you know? So depending on the task, we just need to be honest with ourselves. And as we're doing it, what I like about the 3.3 rule is it encourages us to start having some self-awareness. If I'm doing something and I'm just realizing, oh, if I pay attention enough, I'm not loving this right now. I'm definitely not as productive right now as I was when I started. That means I need to take a break. This isn't something where it's like, oh, you need to work the full 60 minutes or the full 90 minutes. I worked whatever amount of time was, and I now realize I'm not being productive. I need to take a break. And however long that time was, just multiply that by 0.3, and that's how long your break should be.
It's so interesting. Like, I didn't ever purposely think of this stuff. And then you the manuscript you sent me, and we booked this podcast, obviously, and I watched some of the videos you had done on this on the YouTube channel for Insight and all that. And I was like, you know, I still routinely, even though I don't have a gym to go to in the mornings, I still wake up at 4:30. I am down here, coffee in hand, let the dog out, and working by 5 a.m. every day. And that's even like Saturday and Sunday. It's like, I just like waking up at that time. And I like when no one can bother me. But I found this sweet spot where 5 a.m. to just about 7, and then I'm itching. And that's when I go to the gym. Because I've literally been like, fuck, I have this to do for a client. I've got to do this. And I've worked from 5 a.m. to 9 or 10 a.m. And I agree. I bet you the last 2 to 3 hours of that work was dog shit. Like, it got done, but I didn't enjoy it. And that's the whole reason we do what we do. We should enjoy what we're doing. And that's when someone's like, man, I'm doing something for my business and I don't enjoy it. I'm like, what do you mean you don't enjoy that? Do you just not enjoy that part? If you don't, outsource it. But you should, I mean, that's the best part of this. I'm like never in a bad mood because I truly enjoy what I fucking love to do every day. You know, I went out last night to a Cavs game with a bunch of buddies. And I listened to them bitch and complain about jobs. And I feel so bad. But it's also, you're right, the workday, their boss gives them way too much to do. The expectations are incredibly high and they view time as like, you know, I just don't have enough time to do this. So I have to work throughout the whole day. Or a boss who feels, you know, when you switch someone to salary, I get this all the time. They're like, yeah, but if I pay them a salary, Stu, if I get someone to switch from like an hourly compensation plan to salary, even though it's the exact same amount of money, they instantly like, wait, but I got to make sure they're doing something always. Like, why? As long as the task gets done, can you define for everyone? Because you mentioned productivity drops. People who think they get in work like flow state. Isn't productivity just the intersection of the amount of time or what you get done versus the time horizon? Is that? Am I thinking of productivity right? What would we define productivity as?
Yeah. So however long I'm working, how can I increase my input in that time frame? And so if I'm doing a 3.3 rule and taking breaks, I'm going to be getting more done when I'm taking focus breaks, because what it does is most people is subconscious, but they don't realize that not taking breaks is affecting their work. And so if I take a break, I've now given myself permission to not feel guilty. That's what the 3.3 rule gives people permission to not feel guilty to take a break. And I can tell you, when I introduced it to my team, we have 200 plus team members now. So it's crazy. But a lot of pushback. Even I'm like, wait, okay. So if I'm like taking a break and I'm just sitting there and you walk by, you're not going to get mad at me. I'm like, no, first of all, when have I ever gotten mad at you? At least yelling. You need to step it up and be more productive. That's different. But I still have never yelled. Jeez. Yeah. And they're like, okay. So like, even when they were given permission, they're still that like, but that's not how we've been taught. That's not how it's been for the last 100 years. And that's what you talked about is the biggest pushback we get from people. It's like, yeah, but they're on salary. I need them working the whole time. The science supports that if you give them more breaks and let them be intentional about their breaks and give them permission to do absolutely no work during those breaks, they in fact will produce more for you than what they're currently producing. And I'm like, all I can do is say, that's what the science says. And if you don't believe me, the only way to prove me wrong is to actually try it out. And I'm confident when you try it out, you're going to realize, wow, everyone's being more productive.
Yeah, I don't want to go down that salary rabbit hole, but it's like, people tell me that, like, exactly what you just said. I'm like, you don't think of it as you pay for their time. You're paying for an end output, like a result, a KPI, whatever you want to call it. If that gets done sooner, that's good. If the end result is achieved sooner than 40 hours, that's a good thing. That's a good employee. Right. They have earned whatever that, I mean, like, you know, it's like, oh, well, they got it done in 30 hours, so I could add 10 more hours on, I guess, but that's not the point. Like, it's not how you should view it.
And if they could get more done, then you need to pay them more money.
Like, and have them train everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Your point, it's interesting in the gym world, how salary is very frightening to a lot of gym owners, but I was actually talking to Craig Patty Patterson with Mad Labs the other day.
Yeah.
And he's a huge proponent of this. I mean, he's had trainers who have a career with him because he's been paying them a salary like other people get with jobs, and they get time off. Because guess what? That means they want to keep having that job. I can tell you, when I was running my gym for those 3 years, like, there was rotation through coaches because it's not sustainable to just have a piecemeal pay as you go. And all of them had other jobs. So like, I never had their complete dedication. As amazing as they were when they taught classes, if I could have put them on salary, I would have gotten all their attention. That's where their attention would have been instead of their other jobs. And this is kind of the, oh yeah, I'll come show up when I can. But if any other conflict happens in my life, you're going to have to find someone else to coach my class.
Yeah. And like the gym owner who pays $2,000 a month to a coach every month for the past 3 years. I'm like, okay, so you're essentially paying this person a $24,000 a year salary. Why don't we just put them on salary so your payroll's predictable? Their income is fixed. They know what, they at least know what they're going to make here. And you can exchange. I mean, I have created a comp plan where we went from hourly to salary with not one deviation in what the employee took home. Now, when you go, you know, in this scenario, the trade-off for them is consistency and predictability. The trade-off of the business, predictability. And you might be able to, well, your salary now, you have to attend our monthly meetings or whatever the fuck else you want to maybe sprinkle on top of there, right? It's super interesting. But back to 3.3. And let's talk about this in practical gym owner scenario. They get to the gym at 5 a.m. They're closing. The last class ends at, I don't know, let's say 7:30 or 8 p.m. What would this look like in that kind of a day? Because again, the gym business is different. I always tell them it's not 9 to 5. It's 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. essentially, with gaps in between. It's almost kind of works nice with peak times when you think about a rhythm. So how would you recommend this for a gym owner?
Yeah, you know, if a gym owner actually approached it that way, because I get it. You need the people, your members need to work out before they start their workday, and they want to potentially work out after their workday. But then you have the middle of the actual workday for these people, which is not your technical workday. But 90% of the gym owners that I talk to, of course, are trying to fill in that time with things they can do to like make the business better. And so it becomes this 16-hour shift, which is not good. Science would support that is not good. So you would an easy approach, and I don't know if anyone would ever take me up on this completely, because I get the itch to do stuff in the middle of the day. But yeah, the approach would be do the first 3 to 4 hour shift of the day, and then take that big chunk off in the middle of the day, and come back and do your focus blocks again at the end of the day. But again, I get the itch. It's like, well, now I don't have members in here. There's things I can do to work on the gym, or I'll just throw in a noon class and I'll try to. So we try to find other things to do, which is fine. But maybe as a gym owner, don't be the one responsible for the delivery of those things. You know, one thing that had come up in other gym owner conversations when I'm talking about this is the idea of, well, when I take a break, I just want to work out. That's totally fine. And I'm not saying you have to work out in other places, but if you're working out and other members are there, you can't shut it off as a gym owner. I know it. You can't. Like, I'm teaching form. I want to show the proper form. I want to talk them through what I'm doing. Like, there are so many things where working out for a 3.3 rule break is awesome. And that's a great thing to do. When you're the gym owner and it's your business to do workouts, you may need to find a time where you legit can be completely by yourself, or at least there's other people who know we're doing our own thing. No one's talking to each other. So you can just focus on the break portion of working out.
I used to go to other CrossFit gyms. I would travel up to Lake Norman, which is like a 20-minute drive from where my gym was in Charlotte, to go work out with gym owners up there. And because I didn't want to work in my gym. Sometimes it was hard. Members might be in there, want to talk, whatever it is. Or like me, I see a dusty foot plate of the rig. Everyone knows like what the dirty foot plate looks like. And I'm down there and I'm cleaning the square, like with a rag around there. And it
also
just
why the hell can't someone clean this?
Yes. For everyone listening to this, if your foot plates are dirty right now, everyone, if you own a gym right now, I promise you those foot plates are dirty. Why? Go fucking clean those and just make it someone's job to daily, every gym I walk into. I don't care how spectacularly clean the rest of it is. It's always the foot plates of the rink that are filthy as fuck. And it drives me insane. Wait, let me, adjacent to this book though, I wanted to ask you this, and this is just more my interest. I don't think you'll ever read a book. I think you have a skill set and whatever that I just do not possess. This is different though from Profit First. Like, talk to me about that. Like, because Profit First was McCallowitz had this great concept. You brought it into the fitness world. How did you land? Like, how did, because I'm not gonna lie, I assumed if you ever wrote a second book, it's gonna be another money CPA kind of thing. And I was like, looking at this, I was like, oh, well. Okay, so now John's not just pumping out books for lead generation for a CPA firm. He's actually like he's in this realm of like just general business, like, you know, business advice, life advice, honestly. It's not even business specific. How did you land on this?
Yeah, great question. And just so you know, I don't consider myself an author, and it's painstaking for me. I mean, this book took 2 years to write and all the stuff. And part of it, a great thing, it benefits us as authors because it helps me with concepts I have. And it really, like, you hone it in as you start writing about it, and like, that doesn't really work. I better test it out differently. So with Profit First for micro gyms, it made sense because I was already a member of Profit First, and Mike said, hey, if you find that you're changing the model enough when you're talking to your niche specialty, I can set you up where you can pay a licensing fee and you can write a book for your industry. Like, yeah, awesome. And to your point, it's great. It's been great lead gen. We do Profit First consulting for gym owners. My dad died basically because he was unhealthy. And so there's a soft place in my heart for gym owners who help people stay healthy so that they can stay around longer instead of leaving the earth earlier than they really should with their age. This other book, it's funny. It kind of started as a manifesto to the accounting industry, because another passion I have is how broken the accounting industry is. And I'm biased. Obviously, I'm an accountant. But I think if we continue this trend, our economy is screwed, like the total economy, because we have a decline in people interested in becoming accountants, yet they're still leaving. 60% leave within 3 to 5 years. Why? Because the firms force them to work so many hours and squeeze every last soul, like ounce of soul out of them. They're like, I have no choice. I got to find something else to do. It's like, man, we could just change the way we do the job. They wanted to do accounting in the first place. And there are not very many weirdos like us who actually enjoy accounting. Like, why would we scare them and ruin that passion? So it kind of started as a manifesto. Then it came into, well, what am I doing differently? Because we have always been a non-traditional firm, and our team averages 42.6 hours a week during tax season, which is usually about 70 in other firms. I'm like, okay, well, we care more. Okay, so if I told an accounting firm or anyone, like, you just need to care more. I'm like, I care. Okay, so that's not going to work. Well, we just kind of laid out, like, what are all the things that I'm doing? And I started talking about the ideas to other people who weren't accountants. They're like, I'm a lawyer. The legal industry needs this. I'm a computer programmer. We need that. Like, turns out, big companies trying to screw over their employees by forcing them to work too many hours is universal. And so when I decided that, I'm like, okay, I've learned a lot. I feel like I have a very successful business here. What are the things that I've done in my business to help create work-life harmony with my team, with myself, with what we're doing for the clients? And then you just kind of brainstorm, like, I'm doing this and this and this. Oh, those are actually the same thing. Those are the same thing. And I found the principles, and we came down to, there's 11 things. We call it a baseline. I think there's 11 things that every small business can do, including gyms, that help their company be productive and efficient so that the business stays profitable, because that's still a thing. We have to be profitable to stay in business, and your team members enjoy working for you, and you enjoy working for you, right? Because if without this rule in place, we do run the risk still of gym owners and all business owners becoming burnt out. And what happens when things burn out? The business closes. And I can tell you statistically, for gym owners specifically, if you close your business, there's a high percentage of your members who will never find another gym to go to.
That's, I mean, it's so funny. It's, I was just thinking, as you were talking there, I was just thinking of my lawyer is probably the most expensive professional service I have, right? For most people, most gym owners here, like, when you actually engage a lawyer for whatever it may be, they're probably the most hourly at the highest rate. And the one thing that's always blown my mind, and it helped relieve me, I was the guy that if I got an email, I thought I was better. I was a better service provider as a consultant if I responded as fast as possible. And these were not time sensitive tasks. These were just correspondence back and forth that needed to happen, but not, I thought I was like, you know, I'm going to get a better net promoter score for my customers when I do like some kind of review. And that it was never, oh, he's so prompt in responses. And I thought about my attorney. We email once, maybe a day. He takes about a 24 hour cycle, maybe more, to get back to me. And he's the highest paid professional I have. And if I were to judge him, rate him, review, and I refer him, I've never once said he takes too long to respond to these emails. Now, if it's time sensitive, he's on it and he addresses it appropriately. But it kind of reminded me of what's his face? Tim Ferriss' 4-hour work week. It's kind of like your whole 3.3. It's like, it was also permission as I was going through this, reminding me not everything has to be done now. And so I block out, you know, I'm a Google Calendar colored block guy,
nice.
Big colored block guy. And I do my check-ins with my clients. I have an AM session where I'll respond to shit, and I have a PM session each 30 minutes long. And that's it. Anything comes in between there, if it's a fire, that's different. But otherwise, anything else, I'm not getting to the next block.
Yeah. And that's part of the benefit of having focus blocks and knowing that that focus block is only so long, because we actually get more done if we give ourselves boundaries over that. Just like a workout. Hey, you have a 15 minute cap on this. Everybody, the last 2 minutes is working a lot harder than they would have if it was just like, hey, just need to do the workout. You know, like that.
You taught me in the other, in Profit First, Parkinson's Law. If we have a ton of it, we have a large resource, kids, for everyone listening, and John, correct me if I fuck this up, Parkinson's Law is you will utilize all the resources that you have in front of you. So if you have just that one checking account with all the money in it, you're more likely to spend it. If you have an all-you-can-eat buffet, you're likely to eat more. If you're like, oh, I've got all day to do this, you're likely to take all day to do it versus I need to get this done, like gun to my head, I need this done in 60 minutes. Can I do it? You can, but only if you put yourself in that block. But as gym owners and small business owners, we look at time as an unlimited resource. But it's not, kids. There's 86,400 seconds in the day. Sleep for 8 of them, work out for 30 to 60 of them, take what's left, and then, you know, dial in your shit. And it's really, I mean, again, it's an Excel sheet. Like, this is like looking at your day. It's a calendar, it's just units. Casey Neistat, one of my favorite YouTubers, has a great video. He takes a Jenga set, and he colors them. And he literally does a Google Calendar like color code thing on the ground and just talks about, we all have that same 24 hours a day. Just figure out how you like yours to be and then make your life work within those blocks. I'm assuming are you a focus block guy? Like, you had a grin on your face when I was saying that.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any better way to work. Because if I don't do blocks, then I get wrapped up into all the little minutiae of each day. And at the end of the day, like, I was busy, but I wasn't productive. And I don't know what I did today to push my business forward. So having blocks of things that I know or I need to do to make sure the business moves forward and decisions need to be made or projects need to be completed, you got to do the blocks. And with the 3.3 rule, you can set it up so that, you know, I focus for amount of time here. I'm now going to take a break instead of back to back to back blocks of mental fatigue and focus. It just doesn't work. You got to give yourself space. So part of the idea is you really just need to intentionally allow yourself to take a break. And for most gym owners, that's a hard concept. Because I think on some level, we are a bit of workaholics in the gym owner space.
We are. When I owned my gym, and I'd pride myself on a 16-hour workday. I'd be like, I can outwork everyone. I can go off 3 hours of sleep. I wore that as a badge of honor early on. And I think there's a period of time when you start a business where you kind of need to have this chip on your shoulder, or maybe a little ego, because especially if you're going to bootstrap something and you're not well capitalized and you really do have to grind it or fake it till you make it, or however you want to phrase that, that it does probably at the end of the day on that Excel sheet add up to a lot of hours, right? There's working hard and then there's working smart. And I think there's an intersection at some point where you work really hard and then you realize you kind of hit that rate, there's no good return, the rate of no return, or you plateau it. And then you realize, oh, it's smart work that does this now. And that's the big unlock. And it's our tagline at Micro Gym University. It's like hard work done smart, because everybody works hard. Yeah. Everyone works hard. Like, that's the thing is, everyone's like, I work harder than the other guy. No, you don't. No, you don't. You just either work smarter or you're more productive or you have a better method than the other guy. You don't work harder.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up. There's nothing where I ever indicate that because of the 3.3 rule that you're never going to have emergencies or fires or periods of time where it's like, man, I gotta do this. Like for us, with the last 2 weeks of tax season, you better believe my team's working more than 40 hours a week, right? It's go time. It's been go time for 4 months, but it's really go time now. It's the last 2 minutes of that AMRAP, you know? And so you have to allow yourself, if you're going to do that, you still need to program in. I would say still do the 3.3 rule because you're going to be more productive, but maybe you add a third cycle, right? So now you're getting 9 hours of productivity in during the day instead of 6. And if I have to work a long period of time, go, 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 give yourself some days off in that time period. Because what we're trying to do is, we want to avoid burnout, but when we're in that go, go, go period, I actually don't think burnout's necessarily an issue as long as it's not a perpetual, I always have to work this hard to keep the doors open, right? It's a fire thing. I just started. I got to get 100 members. I'm going to work hard till I get 100 members, whatever that goal is. It's got to be a short amount of time. It can't be just, I'm perpetually going to work 80 hours a week. But in that short amount of time, so let's say that's 4 weeks, I would then say, hey, well, what's 30% of 4 weeks? Like with 28 days. So what am I at, like 6 days? I'm going to take a week off after I work after I work nine hours of productivity a day for 4 weeks in a row, give yourself a week off. The rule can be applied on a macro level as well. And I encourage people to do that. Because again, as workaholics, we do run the risk that if we're not forcing ourselves to take breaks, which is what we have to do as workaholics, you will eventually burn out. Workaholics still burn out.
And the 3.3 rule is something that I find, or any level of productivity, and you know, anytime I've ever had to give advice to someone personally, professionally on productivity, the biggest issue or the biggest obstacle here is going to be you, because this is behavior modification, which is the hardest. Like, if you were going to start a warehouse company and you got your first warehouse and you're in there and you're moving all the boxes with your legs in your hands, all of them every day, moving them, I could probably sell you on the idea of, hey man, but if you invest $40,000 into a forklift, it's going to pay for itself, because you can buy that. It's a thing I did. I bought it like buying SaaS, like, oh, I got scheduling software. I pay $20 a month, but it does this thing for me. The 3.3 rule or any level of like behavior modification is the hardest thing, because you can't buy it. You can't push a button. You actually have to work against yourself, because your human nature or the history and your behaviors are the hardest things to change. But those are the people that I find to be the most successful. Like, the ones I try to surround myself with are people who they don't accept whatever it is. They like, oh, I'm like this, but if I want to be something else or different or better, more productive or whatever, better husband, whatever, I have to do this. Okay, I'm just going to do that. That's what I do now.
And I'm guessing all your gym owners are like, oh yeah, the nutrition services that we sell. People can buy the nutrition service, but if the client doesn't modify their behavior, obviously it's not going to work.
100%. You can go to how many gym owners listen to this. You got that client who's been with you 6 years. They look like shit still. They love you. They're a great client, but they still look like shit, because that's 1 hour, maybe 3 days a week that they see you, maybe four if they're really into it. That's 23 for them without the behavior modification. So when people are like, oh, I own a gym and I change lives. No. Fuckface, you don't change lives. You present an opportunity for someone to change their own life, but you don't change lives. You create an opportunity for someone. Don't take that away from them, number one. And number two, the gym be like, oh my God, can I put on 20 pounds of muscle? Can I lose 10 pounds? I mean, maybe. I don't know. This alone isn't going to do it though. I promise you. I've always been like the worst salesman in my gym. They'd be like, oh, I'm trying to lose 20 pounds. I'm like, oh yeah, this isn't going to do that. They're like, what? Like, this will help, but my God, lady, you're only going to be here 12 hours a month. I can't.
You got to stop being the ding dongs and the ho-hos. Yeah,
exactly. Like, you got to move more than the 12 hours a month you're going to be here. Like, yeah, this is just part of it. This is just really fun. This is probably the most fun way you're going to do it. Anything else aside, you have to like, you're going to go for a run or you're going to whatever. This, I promise, should be the most fun fitness you'll do. But because behavior modification is the hardest.
Yeah. And that's what we're at. Here, that's exactly what's going on, especially for most people, because it's been structured this way for 100+ years. It's almost part of our DNA now, and so I would just tell people, man, you gotta give it a shot, try it out. You can literally try it out tomorrow, whenever you hear this. Work up to 3 hours, however long you work, followed by a 30% recovery period, and you may realize that you got a lot more done that day. And then it just becomes a matter of behavior. Like, what do? I can look at my day at the end of today. I can look at tomorrow and say like, okay, I can see what I have to do. Better make sure I block out, because I'm a calendar guy. So I'm going to calendar out the breaks to make sure they're there. I could do that. If I'm a morning guy, I'm going to decide to look at my day based on the morning. Cool. Whenever you want to look at it. But it is going to require you to start thinking through purposely giving yourself that break time.
One of my favorite parts of the day is at the end of the day, I'm generally in bed around like 8:39. I'm not asleep till probably like 9:30 or so, but I'm in bed and I pull up my calendar and I got my dorky little blue light glasses on and I look all professional and I'm looking at my phone and I'm looking at the color blocks for the next day. And I love, like, I know red is WTF. I know green is the gym real estate company. And I know blue is me, like my personal type. And I get excited, like, oh man, it's going to be great. I get to do that. Like, I'm looking forward to the next day versus a gym owner or any business owner who just every day is just a pile of shit. It's just, I've got shit to do tomorrow. Well, what kind of shit? I don't know. I got everything to do. Well, let's just start breaking it down. Okay, well, can we do this one on Thursday and spread this out here? Would it be smart to move this here? When are you going to work it? If it's so nice, like when anyone who's a messy person, or if you're messy in your business, but you've ever like Maria Kondo'd your fucking closet, like cleaned out and organized, and you're like, God, it feels so good. That's all we're talking about, is essentially prioritizing your, or organizing your time.
Yeah. We're trying to organize your time, but we're trying to base it on science now, so that we realize after up 3 hours, you are not as productive, even if you still enjoy doing it. And I just argue, if you're not the most productive you can be, why not take some personal time and take a break and come back and be more productive, so that that time is as efficient as possible? Because to your point, time is not unlimited. There is 24 hours in a day, every day for every person. Why not make the most out of whatever we're focused on?
How do you, we talked earlier about, you know, in the corporate setting, Sally walks in and chats my ear off and steals 10 minutes of my time here. Or I get, you know, a meeting that should have been an email. One thing that always helped me, and I probably use it too often at times. No is a complete sentence. No is like when people, like, I'm a sucker. I get people come through Charlotte constantly and be like, hey, Stu, I'm in Charlotte, blah, blah. Can we meet up for a cup of coffee, buy you a cup of coffee? And I will do that meeting every single time, but only when it fits into my calendar. I had a really nice kid the other day come through here, and he was hiking with his family in the morning. And he's like, hey, can we meet up? And I said, well, I'll be up at 4:30. I will be working until 7. I will be at the gym from 7 to 9. I can meet you at 9:30. Oh, fuck. We got a hike. We're doing this, whatever. Can you do something else? No. I didn't say why. I just said no. And it can come off as rude. So I found myself in the beginning when I was saying this, I'm like, no, because I keep a tight schedule, but I would whatever. Now I'm just kind of in that dickhead mode where I'm just like, nope, real simple. Like, what? That's it. Because it's a complete sentence.
Yeah. I mean, you could also say, if you don't want to be as dickish, you just be like, I'm not available at that time.
Yeah.
Same deal, right? But yeah, exactly. That was a complete sentence. And I'm the same way. Like, hey, can you, like, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I can be in the office by 9, but because of my workout schedule on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, when I'm doing strength lifting with buddies, I'm really not in the office till 10. And can you do this at 9:30? I'm like, no, I'm not sacrificing that part of my life, because it's so easy. Even for gym owners, I've met some gym owners who don't look very fit and don't work out, you know? It's like, dude, I get it's your business, but you obviously believe in the idea of working out. Why are you letting the stress and workload of your business negate the importance for you personally of working out and exercising regularly? Yeah.
No, 100%. It's I use Acuity for scheduling, like Calendly and things like that. Like, I can't remember, I guess back is probably college or something, but like before, these scheduling tools were so easy, where I give you a link, and now that we have to have no more communication, it's like, these are the times that I'm available. And that's, you take a pay from, like, hey, I didn't see anything on your calendar. Yeah. Cause there's nothing available on that day. Oh, I thought maybe you would have some. No. What, you think I have a back pocket time slot for you? No, just fucking pick a time that I'm available. I'm, you know, it's crazy. There's like a couple people in your life, you probably have the secret menu calendar, like some extra time slots, you know, my daughter, my fiance, like my family, stuff like that. But for everyone else, it's just easy to just, this is when I'm available, and because it's what I want to be. I always like thinking of a business. Go ahead.
There's two thoughts I have on that. One is kind of side, but it's funny. When you're saying no, because it reminded me of something Dan Sullivan teaches. He's the founder of Strategic Coach. And he said, I want it. You don't have to have, I want it because. No, you don't need a reason to want something. You can just want it. It's okay. You want an expensive car? Well, I want an expensive car because, no, it's okay to just want it. So it's okay to say no. You don't need a reason to justify people. The other thing I was thinking of, I have a business partner who kind of is the opposite of what you're describing, where if there's a fire or something, and even things that aren't even fires, but someone's asking him, like, well, can you squeeze me in? He'll squeeze them in. And so he's so overscheduled. He's so busy. And you're talking like really long days, back-to-back appointments. A lot of times when he's on appointments, Like there's times we've been on a Zoom call together and he's not the only one, but like he's literally head down the whole time texting conversation stuff with people. So it's like he's trying to be in two. There was one time, I'm not joking, he was in a meeting with us and he had two phones, and it's like he was in trying to be in three meetings at the same time. It's like, look, first of all, he has created this numbing factor in his life where he doesn't realize what that's doing to him, but it is unhealthy. So like what you're describing, if people can choose to be offended by your no, right? But at the end of the day, it's the healthiest way for all of us to approach the things that we're doing. Hey, can you squeeze me in? No, this is when I'm available. Well, it's really an emergency. Is it?
Not for me. For you, maybe.
But even that time, like we get it all the time. This is an emergency. It's actually not an emergency. I get we wanted to have you return to you yesterday, but we still have 2 weeks technically before you need to file. So not an emergency. I got this letter from the IRS. Okay, is someone going to die? No. All right, cool. We can schedule this out a couple days.
Yeah. It's the best thing I've done for the consulting business. I use a platform, but I use Workplace by Meta. And it allows for, it's like just a lot of audio messages. I just wish that they had which is great because I can, instead of having to type out 10 emails or respond to 10 emails, whatever, I can just be going back and forth, like push to talk walkie talkie while I walk the dog, right? It's like, I can double dip or multitask a lot easier with audio. Cause my brain, that part, you know, answering these questions is not challenging or weighing on me cognitively typically. So it's like, okay, I can multitask. I just wish that they would put a limit. Cause you know how it is. You get like, most people don't send you paragraph and paragraph emails. The second you switch them to audio messages, I get a 30-minute podcast to ask me one question. I'm like, when are they going to put a governor on the limits? Like, just like Instagram used to be, or Snapchat, you had 10 seconds to get it out. If you can't say it in 10 seconds, don't fucking send it. I want to ask on this real quick before we wrap up here. When you wrote the book, which rhythm did you follow for 3.3?
I found I was a jogger. So an hour and a half of writing and a 30-minute break was my best structure. But it's interesting. Mike Michalowicz is a good friend of mine. And he is like, it's interesting as he was looking at the science as well. He's like, he's like a 50 to 55 minute guy with a 10 to 15 minute break afterwards. It's like, I can't go longer than that. I know that my writing starts sucking and I just become numb and like, I don't start putting words on paper. So it's interesting how people find what their own rhythms are. And again, that's just writing, right? So depending on your task that you're approaching, totally okay to have different approaches to the different tasks.
What's the next book going to be?
Oh gosh, I hope none. Like I said, I'm not an author. It's so much work. I do believe like this is the 3.3 rule is, it's so egotistical, but it's like my gift to the world. It's what I've learned from my experiences. I feel like all the stuff in that book it works. I'm not saying it's the only thing that can work, but it worked for me. And I think it's valuable for other people if they read it. And so this is probably gonna be something that sticks with me for a long time. At some point, Inside Tax, you know, it'll be sold, right? There'll be an exit of some sort. But I can see myself continuing with the 3.3 rule and that type of things, because saving people money on taxes is great. And I like it. I hate the government. I want to keep money in business owners' pockets. But I can really see a lot of value in what I ended up putting together here with this book.
I love it. I love simple brilliance. Like really the best ideas you've ever heard are very simple. Like, and it just takes someone a second to just sit down and think about it. And then, you know, with 3.3, it's, you know, it's not complicated and anyone can look at that. And whether someone is like, I do 4.6, whatever the fuck, if you have some level of organization, I'm a fan, some level of it, whatever you want to do your thing. I think this is a great way to do it. I would now, do you install this? Like, do you have some employees who like, you know, are, you know, I know attack. Let's get outside tax season. Outside tax season, if you know one of your employees is white knuckling it for 9 hours a day, just going, you know, work. If Aaron Smith, my favorite book, one of my favorite people, my bookkeeper, if she's at home remote and you know she's like white knuckling 9-10 hour days, are you going to call her and be like, this is a performance issue? Like, you need the 3.3 this. Is this like an Insight Tax, like part of your employee code, or is it just a recommendation at Insight Tax?
No, it is part of the code. And I love team that. Members are always surprised. I'm like, dude, you need to take some freaking time off. Like, I get that you are very wordy with your emails and you're not as productive as some of us who are more direct with our communication, but you got to freaking take breaks. And one of these team members emailed me, he wants a raise, which is fine. He's doing good work. But one of the reasons he wants a raise is because, like, look, I don't take breaks. I work all the time. And I'm like, let's pause for a second. That is not a value add for me and my firm. I want you to take breaks, because if you're not taking breaks, you for sure as crap are not as productive the last half of the day. Like, I want you to take breaks because that's selfish for me as the business owner. If you take a break, I know you're going to get more work done. Yeah, I've had conversations. My tax manager feels the weight of the changes we've had with the massive growth that we've experienced. And I said, look, I know it's still tax season. I know you're busy. I need you to go home and talk to your wife and figure out when you're taking breaks. And it doesn't even need to be like you and your wife are going to take a vacation together. I want you to schedule time, even if it's you're just taking the freaking day off and you're hanging out at your house. And she's like, okay, you know, it's like,
if I must.
Yeah, I need you to take breaks. So we let them, because if they work a lot of hours, they're 9-hour white knuckling it. Technically, they've earned extra overtime, like extra PTO. And so we add that into their PTO bucket so they can take it. I'm like, you need to take this. And so we monitor that. Hey, your PTO hour bucket's getting really high. You need to start taking some time off.
I like it. John, where can people access this? I mean, it's available on Amazon. Where should they go?
Yeah, Amazon's the best place to buy the book. You can also go to 33rulebook.com. There's some free resources there. Yeah, those are the two best places.
Cool. Kids, those will be all clicky, show notes, blah, 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 comments, you know, all down there. You guys know what to do with that. John, buddy, it was cool. I was looking back at when he first came on the podcast. I think it was like 2018 or something like that when we first started talking, you know, and I love seeing the success. I love seeing your stuff on LinkedIn. And, you guys are one of the service providers that I recommend to absolutely everybody I work with. So I appreciate all the good work that you do on the whole tax side, but then shit like this is just a cherry on top why you're such a special dude, man. So congrats with everything, and thank you for writing this book.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Thanks for having me.